Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. We do like everybody who has liked or subscribed to our podcasts, which come out each and every Tuesday, both in audio form and on video form. So subscribe on our YouTube channel of Market to Market to be in the loop and always know when new episodes come out. If you are on the Iowa PBS YouTube channel, you might see my picture in another format that's not market-to-market related. It is Iowa PBS Sports. Part of my job is to cover the state girls basketball tournament and the state softball tournament for championships. And we get to know the coaches and the players and find out where the girls are headed in their future endeavors. And we also talk to the coaches. Some we get to know a little better than others because they are frequent visitors to Des Moines and the state basketball tournament. Today's guest, Doug Winterfeld, is one such gentleman who is a farmer who usually asks me, now, why is livestock not moving in the direction I need it to right now after we're done talking basketball? He wants to know about markets. So we're going to talk about his role on his family farm, his job as a basketball coach, the mixing of the two, the makeup of the players, and just what his overall experience is like as a state champion coach. This year, his Sioux Center team were state champions. That's in northwest Iowa, and it is a very big hotbed of smaller school basketball. We'll find out maybe why that's the case, and just about the area in general, and how agriculture and sports go together. That's this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. Let's get started. When you're doing chores, do you think more about the animals, or are you thinking about that defense that gave you fits the night before?
Well, first of all, I don't really do chores.
Wait a minute. Is that because you're senior in the operation, or how'd that happen?
That's pretty much going to computers and feed trucks, and they don't get along with me very well. So kind of took me out of that rotation of doing any feeding at the operation.
So why don't you just give me a little background? So I've always known you to be a cattle farmer, but it's probably way more complex than that.
It is. We are a family farm. My dad, my three other two brothers, and we each have a son in it. So there's seven of us there. And then we have a numerous hired men that help us out. But yeah, we have a custom feedlot. We own part ownership of the cattle in there. Farm corn, soybeans. So yeah, a fairly large operation and keeps us busy.
All there in Sioux County?
All there in Sioux County, over into South Dakota. We're out in that area.
Doesn't sound like a farm that started up just a couple of years ago. Is it something you grew up in?
Yeah, us boys grew up in that, yes. Growing up, working with my dad and shoveling the barns when we had hogs and all the old outside barns. That's how it started. And then we thought we really graduated when we got a skid loader. And so, yeah, it kind of went from there. Then in the winter, my dad, one story that he said, you guys get it clean, get all the barns cleaned every night after school. You can go in the shop and play basketball. So we could do it pretty fast. And
when there was a reward coming.
Oh, yeah, when you got that reward, you can do it really fast. The only thing us boys didn't think about is when, you know, when we don't want to play basketball, he's still expecting us to do it that fast. So it was.
You'd proven you could do it. I get it.
Yeah, we had proven something and then later on thought about our proving wasn't quite as much fun.
So was basketball the only sport you kind of hustled to the work through to play?
Yeah, basketball's our family loves basketball. My brothers both played in college. I didn't. I decided that I wanted to go to the farm. I'd had enough of school. So, and then my son played and played for Northwestern there in Orange City. So, yeah, it's been big. I got started coaching. Neighbor across the road asked me to help with his AAU. He had a son that was in fifth grade, and that's how I got started in 1990. That's when I started doing AAU.
You couldn't have been that old in 90.
Hmm.
You were probably not too far out removed from high school.
Yeah, I played and I graduated in 81.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was exciting to try and yeah, this is where I am today. And, you know, unfortunately for Lauren Ringemorter was our was a guy that asked me, his grandsons played for Western here this year and had runner up, but we just about had two state titles there right across the road from each other.
So that would have meant, well, no, you, if they didn't win, that means you win bragging rights.
I guess, yeah. That's we won't go there. He'll he'll remind me of that.
When you think about the work as a kid to get to play basketball, you're coaching girls that are at the age that you were doing that work to hustle. Do you think they think about hustling with their work to get done so they can do basketball?
Probably not quite like I did. Yeah. You know, and the good thing about it for me is these girls want to be there. And, you know, they come and they work hard in practice. You know, going from the boys program, which I was with the boys program for 6 years before taking the girls at JV and freshman. And when I took it over and they talked me into taking it, I just said, well, I don't know how to coach girls. I'm going to coach them just like I do boys. And I've done that ever since, and it's worked out well for me.
I remember you saying that exact line to me a few years ago when I asked you about your background. And do you think that has changed in how you can coach? Not necessarily you can coach girls, but how girls are coached now is that they are just coached like the guys.
Yeah, you want to push them, but you have to learn. I think you got to go through that. That transition from boys to girls is can be a transition. You figure out, you know, how can I motivate them? Every team, every year is different how the motivation happens. And, you know, something might work this year. Next year it might not with a different team, even though there might be some players on that team from the previous year. It's totally different. We'll have to figure that out in a year from now.
We'll get to your team in a minute. I want to talk about that run, but I want to go back to this. I have this vision of you cleaning out the barn to play basketball. What is it about your area of the state that just seems to all these neighboring towns? I'm pretty sure I've learned Northwest Iowa because they all send a different basketball team to state each year. What is it about the culture of basketball in Northwest Iowa?
I just think back, it just kind of, we grow up with it. It just seems to be one of the sports that everybody in the area just really enjoys, whether it be high school, whether it be college. We get very good attendance at our colleges, and our kids stay, you know, in the area pretty much. But it's just something that I think as a kid we grew up with it. Basketball was a thing. Didn't have a hoop early. Had a little ring we put on a post down in the basement and had no backboard or anything and low ceiling. So, you know, just all those things. We had hoops hanging on our doors in our house for our kids and our boys and my daughters both played too. So
low ceilings prompt not good three-point shooting. That's all about transition and getting out front and getting behind a defense, it sounds
Yeah, that's you want to be as accurate as you can because otherwise you're running after in the other part of the basement too. So, yeah, we pretty much do basketball wherever, hoops, whatever it is in the house.
When you were the age of these girls that you're coaching, did you have your eyes set? You always talk – you've mentioned going back to farming, but – at that point, you're 15, you're 16. Were you still thinking, I'd like to do basketball in some capacity after I'm done playing? Did young Doug have that in mind?
No. Had the opportunity to go play in college, but just I love farming.
You were ready to get on the farm.
I was ready to start farming, and I just loved being outside and loved working with animals, and I was just done with it.
When you say finishing or feeding operations, so are these ones that you only own for just a little while? Are they passing through? How's your setup?
Our setup is, we'll buy them as calves, sell them as fats. You know, that's mostly what our operation at home is.
How has it been this year?
It's been all right. You know, the winter's been a little tough on them. The cold
weather-wise, you mean?
Yeah, weather has been very tough. Cattle are probably a little lighter than normal. What we're seeing, what's been going out the last few weeks here. So, but otherwise, in general, market's good. Whether it'll stay there, I don't know. Nobody knows that with everything going on in the world. But Right now it's good.
In Sioux County, Iowa, you have a few options of where you take your animals. Where's the primary, where do they go usually next after your place?
They go a number of places. They can go Tyson, Cargill, Nebraska Beef, Greater O, JBS. I mean, everybody, you know, we just put them out there and whoever's, you know, the highest usually gets them no matter what.
Having options has been good for you.
It has. It hasn't been that way in the past. You know, it's been very limited, but everybody's kind of coming to the table, and with new plants and that going online, that helps too.
Let's go back 3 years when COVID struck. What happened to you and your, what did you have? Did you have a little backup at home, or it was kind of limited there for a while on some of your options?
Yeah, we were fairly fortunate that year. You know, we were able to move. We had a number of our cattle were gone before that happened. So, but yeah, we did have some on hand that was not very good. You know, it just wasn't. And it wasn't anything anybody did. Just the nature of what happens in the world.
And that sometimes is hard for some people to understand. Probably some of the younger people that worked for you weren't quite as attuned to booms and busts that you'd been through.
Yeah, I think any younger farmers that are beginning, if they went through that situation, maybe the years prior to that, they made good money feeding their cattle, hadn't experienced that. So it was kind of a wake up. Anything can happen.
And that history, I mean, we always discuss when I talk to guests about, you know, we had a history documentary about the 80s farm crisis. And that's, we always hear from teachers who say, keep showing that, or we want to use that. We need to remind people about that. You're also teaching some of these younger people on your farm about history. And it's kind of, you were living real life history in 2020.
Yeah.
And did you feel that the lessons been learned by not just your crew, but in general of those in agriculture?
I would guess, you know, in general, and like our crew too. I mean, our younger ones are now in the meetings with the financials for the farm and that, and they walk out of there and they're just like, wow, you know, yeah, this is real. This is real now, and it isn't going to make every year. And I think that's the, you know, what everybody thinks is that we don't ever lose. But, you know, you go through one of those reality checks every once in a while.
Kind of like the fans of your basketball team. We never lose.
Well, if we do, we know whose fault it is.
The assistants.
Yeah.
Feeding, corn, beans. Are you to the point right now looking at some of that wheat from faraway places that might be able to help some of your bottom line?
For our operation, we produce enough corn for everything for the entire year. So we don't have to jump into that market. The only thing that would change a little bit is ethanol. We feed a lot of byproducts. So, you know, that's one area you got to always be conscious of and make sure you have a backup plan. Because again, you never know. You never know.
That DDG's been good for you.
Yeah.
That's been a good byproduct. I mean, that's a discussion I've had with a family member. He's like, well, ethanol's great, but that DDG has been...
Yeah.
Huge.
It has. And I think everybody that feeds or has the opportunity to feeds it at as high a level as they possibly can. It's just a good feed. And but again, you know, these ethanol plants slow down, shut down, whatever, everybody's scrambling.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a feed that you have put up and you don't have to worry. So we do some other things. We'll put some silage up and just keep it for summer months just in case we need something to offset that.
Do you still like farming?
Oh, yeah.
What do you like about it?
Oh, just the challenge. Challenge and watching the young generation start to take hold. And I'm seeing that more and more the last couple of years. My two nephews decided not. The COVID thing probably was a good thing for them. They were going to take a two-year course at Dort College, Ag, and then the COVID hit. And that course, you were 3 days in class, 2 days out in the field of what you wanted. Well, with COVID, they wouldn't let them do that. So they decided they weren't going. And now all of a sudden, there's no way they're going. They've decided that, you know, why we're doing exactly what we want and that. So, it's been good.
So primarily, when I joked about you doing chores, you really aren't doing, that's other people that are doing things. What's your primary role then?
Overlook everything. My son, Corey, he does all the financials. He checks everything. If he's got a question, he can come to me. We discuss the selling and marketing of the products we have. I turn it over to him. We have a hired man that is in between our employees and us. So if somebody has something that has to be done, we call him and then he disperses it to whoever, to get done for us. So we have, you know, our crew is really good that way. And they look forward to my mom's meals. She makes meals 3 days a week for everybody. So, when she's gone, everybody knows it, and they keep asking when she's going to be back. So
we'll get to your mom in a minute about the you're kind of teasing a little bit there where we're going to go. When you are coaching, though, when the season is the majority, October, November, you know, October is mm-hmm. a prep, but November, December, January, February, March, does your role change on the farm, or do you still try to do what you do in the summer as well in the fall or in the winter?
Wintertime, there's 4 months, November, December, January, February, into the first part of March, hopefully. It's about basketball. It's pretty much about basketball, I'll be honest. And they know it. They know those months. They can still get a hold of me. I still go to my office, but I'm probably not looking so much at markets as more watching film.
And you do, so I guess in a follow-up to your previous answer, you are doing the marketing?
Yeah, I do primarily. Do some of the marketing. Corey and I, and I'll ask my brothers what they think. So, so that it ain't all on me. I got the coaching on me. I don't need another area of my life on me too, so.
Which one's more stressful, coaching or marketing?
The coaching actually relieves me of the pressure of the farm. There's teachers that can't understand that, be in the coach's lounge before practice or that, and they just can't understand why I would want to go through that stress. I'm like, this is fun. This is fun for me. Gets me away from what I need to, am involved in every day.
Are there very specific compartments of your life, the time of day, like at 3 o'clock when you leave the farm is behind you. And when you're at 10 a.m., okay, maybe during basketball season, you are thinking about basketball, but you're able to compartmentalize things.
Yeah. In the mornings, 8:30, we're usually watching to see what the markets are doing, opening up, watch them through noon, 1 o'clock, and then 1 o'clock, it starts to switch. And then by 2:30, I'm gone. And when I leave the office, it's pretty much, I got about a 5-10 minute ride to town. So that's when it changes, flips. It's basketball then.
Are you on the phone calling assistants or anybody else? You're just
focused.
Your drive mind, yep. is your time.
Yep, that's my time.
Does it reverse coming home? I've talked to, there was a softball coach a few years ago that used to drive 2 minutes to his diamond. Then it was 45 minutes. He said in that 45 minutes, he goes, I was a better husband when I got home because I had already turned over the game in my head. The 2 minute drive coach, he took it home too much. Do you use those 10 minutes to decompress after a maybe not a great practice or maybe not a great game?
I'll probably carry it, just how it's going into the evening a little bit. Then if it's a practice the next day, I'll prepare for that already, start preparing. So it's pretty much basketball. And during the season, I'll put basketball on at night because there might be something I can pick up from some other team or whatever, whether it be college, whatever. There might be some little thing that might help us.
You see an out-of-bounds play you like. You see a different approach on a trap.
Yep.
A different motion here. Oh, that's interesting. Do you have a notebook then?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I got a notebook and pad right by my chair.
Is it the same one that you have in the office, like if something comes to you?
Sometimes I'll take it with me. Yeah. I got a folder or notebook that I take with me both places.
Okay. So it's always on your mind and always and available to write out what's on your mind.
Yep.
When you started coaching basketball, when it went to the full-time varsity job, Did you change in the way you approach basketball and work and that balance? Did you feel like you had to be more into basketball when you were the head coach? Or when you were an assistant, you were like, no, I was all in as an assistant.
It changed. It changed. When I was with the boys program, we had the head coach would set out a practice schedule, and then we tried to stay on the same so that if he wanted to move players back and forth, that's how our practice would go. And then all of a sudden, yeah, it's on you. Now you gotta do that. And I would do it when he didn't have practice. I would have my own practice schedule with the boys. But yeah, otherwise, all of a sudden, yeah, it's on you. When I first came in, I didn't have any assistants. There wasn't anybody in the girls program. So, yeah, I mean, I did camps, little camp by myself that year, first year. And, yeah, it was a challenge.
I'm thinking 15 years. Is that what it is? You've been varsity head coach?
23.
Okay. It is Brandon that was 15. You're 23. How is Doug from 23 years ago different to the one he is now?
There's a lot changed. The game has changed. And Doug had to change with the game. The game was very slow early. You know, we'd come down and we'd run sets and keep running them till you. Now Doug's the guy that, yeah, if you're open, shoot it. You know, we got a chance at a rebound, might be a less chance of a turnover. You know, we just, and the girls enjoy it. They don't have to think. They don't have to wonder, oh, is he going to like this shot? Is he not going to, you know, back in the day, yeah, certain people I wanted shots. I would script first five possessions.
Bill Walsh at like right yeah. there, script and possessions.
Yep, we script them, and you know, and then sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, and then you're frustrated, and the girls are frustrated because it was supposed to work. So we take all that out of it, take that out of it, and that's one of the changes that I've made.
Is that in the last 5 years, 10 years, 2 years that you've done that?
No, we did that in about 2016, 15.
And that's about the time you started making regular trips to Des Moines, right?
Yeah.
Correlation? No. Coincidence?
I think a little of both. I think we had players that could do what we were doing. And then you go through some years that you maybe can't quite do, maybe don't have the depth, maybe, you know, what if for whatever reason mm-hmm. you can't do what you want. But yeah, that was definitely a change. We played zone back in the day, you know, and our games sometimes were 29-32. And, you know, now we're disappointed. The girls are disappointed if we aren't 60 and above. And it's a lot more exciting to watch.
Tell me about this group of girls. And they're a pretty special group, very multi-sport, lots of activities. Pretty dedicated to basketball. What made them stand out that you knew that this is a special group?
Just, you know, multi-sport athletes. Having them go last spring in track, a number of them made it to state, and then they go to softball. They make it to state in softball, and volleyball. You know, honestly, there was a little pressure that this coach get them to state because, you know, every other sport they had pretty much made it. And, But just a special group, just the way they meshed with some of the younger ones, the sophomores we had playing, juniors. Sometimes that can be a little bit of an issue, but not with this group. This group just was together from day one. You could see it. There was something about them. It was going to take a little while with volleyball and playing for a state title. It took a little while for them to get over that first couple weeks. And maybe before Christmas. I think right before Christmas was a big win. We played West Lyon at their place, and they were ranked 15th, and we were able to win that game. And from that point on, actually the coaches and the assistants and I talked, we maybe have something here after that game going into Christmas break.
And I'll take it that you know what you're talking about because you've been a regular in the time that we've covered in the last 10 years. I've seen you a lot at the state tournament. So for your coaching staff and you to kind of look around and go, yeah, we have something. That's you didn't tell anybody that, did you?
No. They have to swear to secrecy. Whatever's said amongst us coaches have to stay there. I don't need to give any other school something to pin on their bulletin board. This is what their coach said. So
And you even came into the state tournament. I want to say that, were you the sixth seed?
Sixth seed.
So you were wearing the dark jerseys, the road team, the whole way.
Yep.
Did that mean no pressure for this group?
No, just play. Just play, you know, and that's kind of been the last. When we started tournament time, we had the one player that was injured, and we had to have a sophomore step up. First night she steps in, she scores 24 in a tournament game. You know, that's pretty special to have a player that can just step right into a role for us. And then, yeah, Reagan still wasn't back when we played Spirit Lake second round, and we were able to get out of that game and then play Unity to go to state, and then we were back to full force again, and we could get into our rotations.
And another power of Unity up in your area that always has great teams, and another guy who has a off-school job as the head coach, yep. Jace Guideman there, and you always love to talk about his, you know, he's more of the, I think, an accountant, and so he thinks it very analytically. Do you think of sports and basketball analytically? I mean, given what you do on the 8-to-5 or 8-to-1 job.
Some would say 8-to-10, maybe. No, I guess I just look at the kids. I figure out, okay, what's this player have for a strength? You know, we just go through, you know, what can we get? How are they going to help us with their abilities? And, but yeah, I don't. You know, I don't pay any attention to numbers. I do not let my players, if they want to look at how they did stats-wise, they don't do it on, don't let me see you doing it, because that's not what a team's made of. You don't have to worry about what your points were. You can look at that with mom and dad afterwards, whatever. But, you know, I don't want them grabbing the book and saying, oh, how many points I have tonight. It's not a part of what I am about, and I don't want my team to be about. It's about us for one common goal.
As a guy who's been in your district for a long time and in that area for your whole life, does that help in your relationship with parents that come through, because they know who you are, what you stand for, what you're about? We're not looking at the stats, we're looking at this. Has that helped in your coaching being so entrenched in your community?
Yeah, I would guess, you know, I guess I don't look at it that way. I've never had any issues with parents doing it as long as I've, you know, been doing it. I mean, if there was an issue, somebody would have surely brought it up already at this point. But no, I've not ever had any issues with parents. And I think, you know, as long as the girls are going hard and doing what they need to do, things go well. And for me,
I think there's a few coaches would like to find out, well, how you got to that point, because I think a lot of coaches have to deal with, and I say deal with parents, and, mm-hmm. and then I had another coach correct me a few years ago and say, no, we work with them. Mm-hmm. We don't deal with them. We work with them. And that's, I guess, in anything in life.
Right.
Is you have to work with somebody, your crew that feeds while you're, or having a load of semi when you're at state basketball of cattle that are heading out to wherever they're going. You're working with those guys.
That's a big part of it. That's a big part of it. If anything's going to be successful, you all got to work together. And you might have to give a little bit. You might have to take a little bit every once in a while. But it's very, very important. And then you need to figure out, okay, so we need to do this different. We're going to work together to figure this out. With girls, it's totally different. I mean, if somebody's not going hard on the floor in the scramble or whatever, might get taken out. And I'm not going to say anything. What we do is we just substitute somebody else in place of her for a rotation. And then it's very simple. The next time they go out, they go really hard. So
message received.
Yeah. And sometimes they maybe don't agree with it. And but, you know, that's how I deal with it. It's very simple that way. I don't have to get stressed over it, you know. Just, you got to go harder. You got to be able to do what we need you to do, and don't let your teammates down.
Nobody let anybody down at state. It looked like you played pretty hard. What was that run like this year?
It was unbelievable. I think even to today yet, it's hard to believe that, you know, it really hasn't sunk in exactly what these girls have accomplished. I think over time here, it will. And, but yeah, just to have those girls, Yeah. It just seeing them when the horn went off, being able to have Tay Gasink walk the ball up, a senior that she took a big hit and was done and tried walkthrough on Friday morning. We had it x-rayed. It was all good, but she absolutely couldn't go. And that was heartbreaking for her, for her teammates, you know, even for the coaching staff, because she laid it on the line at a crucial time in the game.
We had video. I was watching, knowing what was happening, and a friend of yours had sent me a message, and he said, "Hey, I hear that she might get in at the end if there's a comfortable enough lead." Was that, I mean, was that your plan, or did somebody present that to you as a possibility?
No, that was our plan, that if, you know, the coaching staff and I talked, if we could work it in at the end, we wanted to get her in. And right at the, towards the end, I don't know, there was 30 seconds left or something like that. The official was standing in front of me, and I said, "Next time we take possession, just take a timeout for me right away, because I need to get somebody in." And so we were fortunate. We had that opportunity, and she got to walk the ball up. So at that point, I don't think she had a lot of pain, but she definitely did before.
Yeah, it was. It was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough to see in the semis when that injury happened. Your championship moment, you're with the team, you know there's fans behind you. Your parents had been in the stands, but your parents didn't finish the game. And you didn't know any of this had happened until later. Are you okay that you didn't know anything at the time?
Yeah, probably. yeah, my mom just got weak. And in the third quarter, they had to take her over to the hospital. And yeah, we're still dealing with some of that. Hopefully here in the near future, we can take her home. But yeah, that was after the game, looking for them. Don't see them. Thinking, okay, they're back at the motel. It was a little overwhelming probably for them. So, and then took the girls out to eat at Perkins. And then on our Winterfield Snapchat that us kids have, my brother was talking to my sister. That's when I found out that something had happened. And so, yeah, it was fun, but it took a little bit of the bloom off it. But, you know, hopefully she'll get to go home here soon, and then we'll celebrate.
So a little bittersweet. Maybe that's part of the reason things haven't settled in, because your life hasn't settled in yet.
No. On Friday night, we win it. Saturday, I'm driving back some kids and getting the school vehicles back. Back on my way up after the welcome back at noon on Monday, back up in Des Moines. So, yeah, I've been here, you know, quite a few days already, over a week again, ready to go home and sleep in my own bed.
You've allotted a lot of your life now to Des Moines.
I have, 2 weeks.
You hope that you come back again with another team and you stay this long week at a time, but that's a little more fun thing. But hopefully your mother can be back soon and to home and back to making those meals for those guys. They miss them.
Oh, yeah, they miss them. I've had a text from Mick, our head guy there, and he's like, "The guys are wondering when she's going to be back." I said, "Well, it might be a little bit." So they're going to have to keep bringing their own lunches for a while.
Do you think the girls, we talk about it often in our sports coverage at Iowa PBS that, you know, it's more than just a sport. It's about life. Do you think your girls have maybe had a realization that that was great, state championship is wonderful, but coach's mom, that's more important?
They sent me back with some stuff that I didn't know was going to happen. Willa Bleeker talked to her a couple days ago and was asking how mom was doing, you know. That's, you know, and a number of the girls did before I left on Monday. And that's just who these girls are. These girls are concerned about everybody. They had a great accomplishment. They're always going to remember. It'll be a life, you know, a life deal for them. But, you know, they also were able to experience my parents, 89, 83 years old. The two of them went to a game park. And the two of them were playing four across, and both of them were still competitive at 83 and 89. And they're like, "Oh, they're kind of getting into it over there." I'm like, "Yeah, they're a little competitive, and they're going to talk trash even though they're 83 and 89. So, you know, it was good for the girls to see that.
And again, it's that small community knowing they know your parents.
Yep.
It's not, oh, they're visiting. Who are those two people over there?
Yep.
That's the part that gets lost in the large school, I think, the large school teams. They just don't know everybody. Like, I grew up in the small town of, I knew who the parents of the coaches were, if they were around. And does that, that's wonderful, isn't it?
I think. It is great. It's great. Everybody knows everybody. We have fans that come down after games and just tell the girls what a great job they did. You know, we have fans that go to every game. I wish we could give that award to a number of our fans at the beginning of the game. But, you know, we can only pick one, and we can only hope that we can get back to try and get, you know, someone else in that position. But that's a lot of our school. I mean, we have a really good following wherever we go.
Let's tie it all in and say that it's all the rural life and the farming all tied together, right?
It is. Everybody's just, you know, it's interwoven. Everybody's just kind of tied. And, it's just great. Our community is giving. They help pay for whatever these girls, you know. If there's some other added expense to this week, they take care of it for us. Our booster club does a great job at our school. And yeah, we're really blessed as a school.
One more thing about the home area. I guess I should have, this is a little out of order of where I bring it up, but I do want to discuss if any of these young women want to get into agriculture, it's kind of hard right now to do. Sioux County is one of those areas where there's been some pretty expensive farmland. Does that change? I mean, I don't think that any of that comes into basketball, but I mean, does that just change the perspective when some of those girls might not have the same opportunities that you had to get into an operation, and they may have to leave town or do a different job? Because it's not just men that get into farming. There's plenty of women that run farms now. So, I mean, that's how I think of it. Do you think of it that way?
Yeah, it's going to be tough in our area. You know, like our nephews and my son and that, if we look at it and say, hey, you guys going to buy, it's not going to happen. Can't happen. I mean, it just too expensive. Will they have to maybe go somewhere else? Yeah, that's possible. But can they take some of what they showed me this last week on the floor? Can they take that and spread it into a new community or something like that down the road and start something new somewhere else?
It'd be sad to see, but it's sometimes what happens.
It does. And yeah, we can't control that. You know, it just whatever happens, and they're bound to be, you know, they're not going to all be around Northwest Iowa. They're not going to all be there. But we've talked about getting together once a year here for the next few, just try to set up a date over Christmas break and just the team get together again, say, hey, what's going on in your life? Where are you now? And what's, you know, so we'll always have that tie to be able to do things like that.
Well, I appreciate you making time for us and being able to discuss the two sides of your life. I think our audience cares. I think they always like to know that there's more life than just the farm.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, this is my stress relief, if you can believe that.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, Doug. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My thanks to Doug Winterfeld. We had his father in the room as well. He was sitting there in the corner and just kind of enjoyed hearing his son talk about what it's like to be a state champion coach as well as the family farm. Kind of a fun perspective there. If you want to hear new episodes each and every Tuesday, if you have feedback for me, send it to the show at markettomarket@iowapbs.org. We will see you next time. Thanks for watching or listening. Bye-bye.